And these were the rates in the burgundy bar is shown the portion of the event rate per 100,000 population for these two age cohorts following receipt of HPV and other vaccines, which is typical, especially with the first dose, because we give meningococcal C and hepatitis B and sometimes varicella at the same time. And then in the purple bars, or the mauve, is the portion of the rate occurring after HPV vaccine alone. About half of the events that we had reported in the serious category were following dose one, and about half following dose two. And you can see that the most prominent rates on this bar are the redness, swelling, and pain, which is the second column, as well as rash and hives, which is the fifth one down, as well as fever. And allergic reactions with wheezing were much lower, I think only about one, and then the anaphylaxis were three cases. And I'll talk about those on the next slide. When we looked at the 16 serious events, this is how they broke down. So anaphylaxis were three events. These were all girls that were managed with adrenaline, but they met level two of Brighton case definition, which is by and large self-reported symptoms, you know, sensation of throat closure, that kind of thing. Three cases of anesthesia, paresthesia lasting 24 or more hours. These were localized to the arm that received the injection. And I'll just remark that this is also being observed in the national data set, and some of you might be aware of these kinds of reports. The other event that we weren't surprised to see in our data set reported as other severe unusual were syncope with tonic-clonic activity. We had expected this because of the reports that had come out of the U.S. and Australia in advance of our program. And we had extensive discussions with our vaccine safety working group of BCISC, as well as with the HPV planning group, to set up a code in IFES so that we could receive reports of syncope as a separate category. I'm not concerned so much syncope with tonic-clonic activity, but syncope associated with a fall and an injury, because at that point in time, there was already a skull fracture, a single skull fracture, related to a syncope with a fall in the national database. And we did want to have a way of capturing that. And similar types of adverse outcomes related to a fall associated with a faint had been noted in the U.S. VAERS data. But at this point in time, all of our events have been associated with tonic-clonic activity, none with a fall and an injury, which is good. So they're obviously being appropriately managed in terms of making sure that they're supine. And then the last category are other severe unusual events. And these we're trying to recode into other more meaningful categories. We're limited by the information that we receive in IFES, and in the two out of the four, there were no comments provided. So we still have some follow-up to do to find out what exactly occurred that resulted in the coding of that event as other severe or unusual. And we had an opportunity to talk about this issue at our breakout session yesterday on reporting of adverse events following immunization. One girl developed blurry vision, and that was a sustained, not just a short-lived event, and is being followed up in terms of a neurological investigation with CT scan and so on. And there was also one girl who developed autoimmune hemolytic anemia, temporally associated with vaccine receipt, but not necessarily causally associated with vaccine receipt. In terms of the other events that came into us as other severe or unusual, but that we were able to recode into other categories, I'd say the most prominent one is really a flu-like illness following receipt of vaccine, and we're calling that fever plus. So it's fever and typically headache, myalgia, going to bed, taking Tylenol and Advil for a couple of days, and not respiratory symptoms necessarily. So flu-like, we usually associate with respiratory symptoms, fever, myalgia, and so on. These aren't respiratory. And we've checked the product monograph and the results from the clinical trials, that were published that were placebo-controlled clinical trials. And certainly in the female recipients, there is some evidence that events like fever and myalgia and arthralgia were slightly more elevated among the vaccine recipients rather than the placebo recipients, even though in the product monograph, a syndrome of flu-like illness is not a separate or I guess a syndromic category. It's really these specific symptoms that are all coded separately. And we had one interesting event of urinary incontinence at a sporting event the day following receipt of Gardasil, and that we continue to consider certainly other unusual rather than other severe and unlikely to be related to vaccine. In terms of the national data set, so that's the Canadian Adverse Events Following Immunization Surveillance System that is maintained by the Public Health Agency of Canada. By the end of December of 2008, they'd received a total of 310 reports since the onset of marketing of Gardasil. So a rate of about 32 per 100,000 compared to 50 in the VAERS system in the United States. And 2 per 100,000 for serious events, so only 19 serious events, and they're listed here. And I think the important thing to note is that apart from the paresthesias, which we're also noting in our system, and that in the national data set were also largely related to the injected and by and large of short duration, but perhaps several days, the other events, many of them are really not likely to be causally associated. They're temporally associated. So two cases of appendicitis, a breast abscess, new onset of diabetes mellitus, a conversion psychosis. There had been one acute demyelinating encephalopathy presentation of an immunized individual in 2006, but in subsequent follow-up of that individual, including neurological workup and MRIs, that person now has a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. And there are 11 hospitalizations in the national database, but only the one that I mentioned, the syncope with a head injury and an intracranial bleed, was deemed to be definitely related to receipt of the vaccine. And as you know, that's not a specific event. It's an injection-specific event with a faint and a fall with injury. There is one case of Guillain-Barré syndrome in the national data set, but it has a long interval post-immunization, 20 weeks. And for the vaccines such as influenza and tetanus toxoid, where there is deemed to be perhaps a very slight increased risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome following vaccination, the biologically plausible interval is deemed to be 6 to 8 weeks following vaccine receipt. So this is in the data set, but it's deemed to be really outside of the typical range for autoimmune phenomenon related to vaccination for Guillain-Barré as a causal association. And this information is from Dr. Barbara Law, who's the Chief of Vaccine Safety Surveillance at the federal level. So as I mentioned, we will be continuing on with case-by-case review of our events in the PASSIVE system. As you know, there are limitations to this because we're not looking at events in unvaccinated girls. This is something we'd like to do at some point in the future, but would need to be done through facilitated record linkages with administrative databases of physician and hospital separation data, which are held at the Ministry of Health. So I think we have good evidence of safety in the first year of our program. And we'll be publishing both the interim and the final results on our website.